off the ball rugby.
Why is nobody challenging World Rugby about the feed into scrum? Literally the least refereed part of the game. If you go 1 degree crooked on a lineout, 1 degree it's called.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the ball, breakfast.
Everybody's back in harness. All is right with the world, Colm.
Hiya, Jared.
How are you feeling?
I'm good, Jared. It's steamy again, isn't it? Steamy in here. The one thing I would say about that temporary studio, as we are soundtracked by the noise of construction, I hope you can hear it out there, is that it was temperate. I'll give it that. It was a cool environment.
Steamy with
you know, there was obviously the vibe of witness protection about the whole place, because you wouldn't know where we are in the world. There
was nothing behind.
But I did like it. There were kind of primary school seating, which you wouldn't have been privy to out there. Very tight, compact. But it's weird, you know, you get familiar with new surroundings and you don't want to leave those.
Institutionalised.
And institutionalised. Yeah. And then the Stockholm Syndrome of the temporary accommodation.
Would you be a good prisoner, here, do you think?
I think I would, actually.
Yeah.
I was putting myself in DJ's position there for a while, thinking.
Oh, were you?
But I do...
do we know where he is? Is what, he definitely...
He started in Mountshire, didn't he?
How soon do they move him out?
He's getting promoted. How long has he got again? 5 years.
5 years.
Five, yeah.
Quite a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I suppose you break it up into chunks, don't you? It's your KPI, so to speak.
Yeah, 81 minutes.
So here we are, and I've overdressed in terms of layers, because I was dressed for downstairs, but we got a late call to come up here, and we're back. We're back, baby.
It's steamy, and there's jackhammering going on, a bit like the inside of RFK's brain at the moment. You following that story?
Robert.
No. Oh my God, go just check out RFK's poetry.
Who's RFK?
Robert Kennedy Jr.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
As I said, Robert.
Yeah.
As in Donald's buddy.
Exactly, yeah. Oh, yeah. He was having a digital affair with a political journalist who came to do a profile on him. They didn't actually... anyway, it was all online. And as a result of that, her then fiancé has leaked the poetry that RFK Jr. was writing to her. Which, oh my God. If you haven't, you have to do yourself a favour. One of you could deliver it to us if you were of a mind this morning to ruin everybody's breakfast.
Is it 50 Shades stuff?
It's 50 Shades. It's unbelievable. And it's like, it's what? It's, if you got ChatGPT to write you something in the voice of Robert Kennedy Jr., which I'd say is not beyond the bounds of possibility. He's like, what is this thing? Must check out this new ChatGPT thing. This could kill two birds with one stone here. I'm doing research for my gig. Anyway, it's like the biggest story in American politics, but it doesn't matter. Like, she's now written a book and it's in Vanity Fair.
One can access this poetry, right?
What?
One can access this
poetry.
Oh,
it's all over the internet.
Great.
Yeah, I just have no internet access myself.
I do. I'm flying it over here in this part of the world.
Your hotspot's working.
Yeah. Not my actual internet. So, no, I'll have that lined up for you in momentarily. Don't worry about that. In the meantime, Estevao. Estevao. So you walk into the office today, Jar, and I says, how about this Estevao kid? Right? Because Chelsea actually have a load of good players. Okay? And I don't think we've ever been in denial about that. You know, they have a collection of individuals that are very talented. But are they a team? Like, what is the Chelsea team? You know, outside of Cole Palmer. Maybe the most important players. I think you're saying Moises Caicedo when he's fit. Enzo Fernandez.
Yeah. I think everybody thinks they've got the best two partnership of central midfielders in the Premier League, right?
I'd say Arsenal would have something to say to you.
Yeah, Arsenal are close enough. But it's not like...
Well, they're second for reasons. Estevao was going along nicely. And I guess I had him in as, you know, talented young for the 18-year-old signed from Palmeiras. He scored against Chelsea in the Club World Cup in the summer, of course. Chelsea nab him. He already has a good few Brazil senior caps. Great finish last night against Barcelona. So for people who missed it, they beat Barcelona 3-0. They also had three other goals disallowed. Barca reduced to 10 men. But he fires the ball into the roof of the net with his right foot. He's pretty much either foot, Estevao. Plays right wing, but can use both. And very exciting. Tremendously so. Andre Santos as well got a disallowed goal. It's actually more so the players that they didn't even have available last night. When they have everyone available at Chelsea, they could put two 11s out there that are excellent. And then at the same time, I have no faith in them that they have any backbone. This suits them down to the ground. Champions League game where, you know, nothing's mad on the line. So that's the thing about Champions League at the moment, you know.
They did win the Club World Cup.
They did, but that is a pre-season tournament, ultimately, you know. Now, they beat Paris Saint-Germain very well in the decider.
Yeah, they hammered them, didn't they?
3-0.
No, I didn't watch the game. Was it one of those 3-0s where it's like...
Oh, they were well warranted, yeah.
50-50, smash and grab, 1-0.
That ended up being Gianluigi Donnarumma's last game for PSG. So they were excellent there. And they've showcased it. Obviously, they're second in the league. But then, they went to Old Trafford and they were very poor, for example. They have a poor game in them. Last night against Barca, they were against a very drab Barcelona outfit. But I suppose, look, this time of year, it's the same. You saw what Manchester City and the team that they put out against Leverkusen. Not great, like, you know. Pep Guardiola said afterwards, TNT, you know, at this time of the year, okay, I'm trying to rotate. We're playing every 3 days. Maybe I rotated too much. But he was doing it in that sarky tone of his. So you don't know if he was actually sincere or not.
What did you think? You sent me the clip. You sent me the clip to be like, is he sarky?
I think he actually started off sarky and then realised halfway through his answer was like, oh, no, a guy was actually asking me legitimately about this and I'm going to give him an answer that I believe in. But I do think every bit of Pep Guardiola's musings with the media essentially have a tone of disdain about them. That he absolutely hates talking about football.
Well, he's got 1,000 games, you know.
Group of people.
Did he tell you that he's 1,000 games?
He seemed surprised and he was informed of that milestone.
Oh, do you think so? He brought it up a bit since.
Yeah, since someone reminded him, was kind enough to do it. But he, the way his tone and curtness with the media encourages a bit of the odd sycophantic question. So he has that nailed, like Razzie style. He has a control of the media, Pep. So they're a bit afraid of him, you know, after the game. You know, was 10 changes too many, Pep? And then he does that thing where he's scratching his face and he's smiling at you when he's answering. And you know you're in for a bollocking. But he actually, his words were sincere and his tone betrayed it. And yet they lost 2-0 to Leverkusen. But does it really matter this time of year? Top 24, you'll be sorted. I, for one, marginally enjoyed this Champions League version than the group stages that were two years ago.
Yeah, I think...
Marginally.
Well, when your team is in it, it's great.
I didn't like the group stages. I thought they were unbelievably predictable. That it was just two from four and it was almost always the same two from every four. So I get sick of this. At least this kind of time, it's a bit of entertainment in terms of who's playing who. It's like, okay, this game's on now today. Grant. There's a bit of randomness to it. I'd not even look at the table this time of year. I just enjoy the games for what they are.
I wouldn't agree. I find it rips out the jeopardy of it.
I don't think there was any jeopardy. That's why they changed it.
Well, there was jeopardy. It's not the fact that it's not jeopardy they're looking for. It's the opposite of that. Like, we know that they don't want jeopardy. They want a case where, like last year, PSG can start off poorly and have a whole second half of the season to resurrect themselves, you know? They don't want PSG going out in December. That's the last thing they want. Or dropping into the Europa League. So I don't think they're searching for jeopardy. Like, it's pure consistency they want.
But there wasn't any jeopardy in the previous
group
stages either.
Well, there was sufficient that it's like if you were thinking about it, their MO with the whole thing, I suppose, is to make more money. And you get whatever way you get that, because there's more games and everything else. But then the next thing on their list is they basically don't want, like, that back to the whole thing at the root of the Champions League is the fact that you don't want good teams or the big earners to be knocked out too early.
Mm. And so
that's a move towards this. It's just solidifying it further.
Is that bad?
Competitive-wise, it's bad.
Was Paris Saint-Germain in the latter stages last season not good for the competition?
Well, I don't think... Was it good for the competition? It's good for the second half of the competition. It's bad for the first half of the competition. There can be two things, you know. It's great, great finale.
Like,
amazing
the
performance.
First half of the competition was great for loads of... For Villa fans, it was brilliant. Like, it was picaresque across European venues we'd never been before, or not in 25 years, with meaningful games for Villa because they were striving. The super teams were confident of their positions. I think one of them had to scrape in. Did Real Madrid have to scrape in?
PSG did.
Wasn't there a round of last 16 game that was actually...
Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid.
They're two super heavyweights that you would be like, expected them
I suppose that's the point. But like, if you finish in the bottom, previously if you'd finished in the equivalent bottom 16, you're out.
Yeah.
And now you finish in the top 24 and you're in.
Yeah, and now
so it's a little bit of a con. Like, it's just a long game to kind of get to where you need to get. Like, yeah, my thoughts on the knockout Champions League.
I want all the best teams in the knockout, so that the knockouts over two legs, which is the best football that we ever see.
100%, yeah. I find it unfortunate that that means compromising the first half of the competition, where you're like, this doesn't matter.
I felt the exact same way in the all group stages, that it didn't matter. I knew to say, you just know every team that's going through. And it's the same, like, so Man City get grouped against the same three teams. It's like, one of them might be all right, Napoli, and they'll come second. It's like, big deal. It's the same thing. It's the same result. So you may as well just enjoy it and the journey. Like, so, yeah, I like it. So I like the group of fixtures that are on tonight as well. And, yeah, I don't know, the people protesting to keep the group stages 2 years ago when it announced it was leaving. Like, the people love that.
No, this is the European Super League by stealth, yeah, right? That was, yeah. And it was the fudged pan-European, not quite a Super League, which they wanted. They've got this instead.
The only thing about the all-group stages was, if a big team did get eliminated, it was great fun, like, when you're going to round five or six. It just didn't really happen that much. And now that's certainly less likely these days. Like, you want to have an extremely terrible campaign to finish 25th in the league. Like, that would be monumental. Well, it's unlikely.
Will I give you the Estevao headlines? Simply the Est. Brazilian stunner caps perfect night. Estevao. That's good?
Yeah.
You feeling that?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
You're like, no. Yeah. Brazil team hits stunning solo goal as Blues floor Barca. Vow factor. You getting that one? You like that? No? Estevao wonder. That's my favourite. Estevao wonder. And that's the Telegraph.
They're in a good mood today.
There you go.
They're in a good mood today because the Brits did well. They're doing well. How about Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang?
Yeah, apart from Newcastle. That was a good segue. Yeah.
How about 36-year-old Pierre-Emerick scoring his 401st and 402nd career goals against Newcastle last night?
You would have thought he'd retired a couple of times by now.
What, he like, kind of, I thought he
unofficially
was
gone. And officially.
You know, fair play to the boy, because he was shafted out of Arsenal by a young Mikel Arteta at the time in front of the Amazon cameras for his poor attitude. He was captain at the time. So they rid of him.
He showed up late to the North London Derby in his Batmobile, remember?
Yeah.
And he was filmed like outside the ground in traffic. Match traffic, as opposed to like getting there a couple of hours early to.
But he was so damn talented. Then he goes to Barcelona. Then he goes to Chelsea. Do you remember his Chelsea spell?
No.
Was there a wet week?
And there's Turkey somewhere along the way, is there?
No, he's on his second spell at Marseille.
Since
Chelsea, having gone to Al-Kharish or Al-Kharsia.
Oh, sorry.
In the meantime. Right, so he's back.
Are they Saudi?
Yeah, he's
okay.
Back.
Wow. Go off to Saudi, get regenerated, come back and...
What a goal. The first goal last night, very Mark Hughes against Barcelona, Rotterdam vibes, goes wide to the goalkeeper. Great finish to curl around the post. He still has that quality. Harvey Barnes having a hell of a little few weeks for himself.
Scotland's Harvey Barnes.
Yeah, McBarnes. He scores a disallowed goal as well. And look at Man City, as we touched on already, without Erling Haaland in goal and Gianluigi Donnarumma, or sorry, the other way, scoring goals and in goal. Not as good. Now, their team was still very strong on paper, but Leverkusen did the job there in Manchester, and Patrick Schick, our soon-to-be enemy, got the second goal.
He's a good header.
Yeah, very good header. Very good header. But last night, it was all about Chelsea, wasn't it? Chelsea-Barcelona. I do love that fixture in the Champions League.
Is Leverkusen a potential Troy Parrott destination? Would you be happy? Would you suddenly be tuning in?
Yeah, would I tune in more for a Bayern Leverkusen game than I would for an AZ Alkmaar one?
You would, wouldn't you? Because well, they'll play better teams over.
It might be because of the Champions League. But of course, we're going to see Troy this week, tomorrow, in fact, in Europe. I don't mind Troy Parrott staying where he is.
For another season.
Yeah, he's having a good time. Like,
he is having a good time.
Don't be rushing away if you're having a good time.
I know, but there's also you have a moment. You know, you might not be at this moment again. And if you seize the moment, you can triple your wages.
But that moment is solidified in time back there last week, and you can't add to that moment till March.
The 19 goals in 19 games. If he's 30 goals in 30 games by the time March rolls around, he's like one of the most sought after prospects in European football.
Yeah, but it's with the sprinkle on top of the Ireland games, because if he was doing that anyway without the Ireland games, people would be like, oh, there's another guy scoring in the Dutch league.
Yeah. Wow. No, that definitely helps.
So you're saying I can quadruple my wages because of the Ireland stuff?
Oh, if someone comes in from a January, fair play to them. But
would you not go in January if you're him? If you're like,
very careful who you go to. Yeah. Very careful.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well,
I think he's having a good time kind of. When I say off Broadway, I mean that this side of the world, we're not watching all of his games. Right? That's what I mean by off Broadway. So if he stays in mainland Europe.
Did you see early in the Barcelona game, one of their strikers missed.
Ferran Torres.
Was it Ferran Torres?
Was one on one.
With the keeper.
And put it wide after Chelsea, where they botched a play out from the back play.
It's the type of miss that gets gift and sent around the world. Oh, look at this guy. He's useless.
Yeah.
Ferran Torres is not useless.
He's our top scorer this season, Ferran Torres.
But some of the best strikers in the world miss easy chances.
Yeah, they do. What's that meaning?
Well, I mean, just that every time Evan Ferguson missed a chance over the last 6 weeks, everybody's like, he's going to end up in the League of Ireland.
That's a beautiful thing, right? Playing for Roma versus playing for AZ Alkmaar. I'm sure Troy Parrott has missed opportunities for AZ.
Now he's playing in a team that's top of the table. Like there's a reasonable chance that he could end up with a medal this year.
Yeah. Do you know a fun fact about Ferran Torres?
Yeah.
His birthday is the 29th of February.
Ah.
Yeah.
So he's only about 5.
Yeah. So for a 5-year-old, it wasn't too bad.
That's pretty good.
These are top scorers. That's the first time since December that Barcelona were kept scoreless in a game. 53 games later.
Well, that's pretty good, isn't it?
You know what I mean? So they're going to get sent off. Do you know what I loved about that red card? Araujo, their number 4 captain.
The captain?
Do you know what I love about it? Not one protest. Everybody went, no, as soon as he... But I love that about it, you know, because...
It was the same as Malumbi's at the weekend.
It's just nice to have an occasional acceptance of a sending off.
Cucurella... having a flowering.
But it's been coming.
He's very good.
And it's continuing apace. This isn't out of nowhere, you know. This is. I think now he's established in being an excellent left back as opposed to one who got over promoted by going to Chelsea from Brighton at the start.
He was considered like, Brighton fleeced. He was part of that whole.
Yeah. First 6 months was like, this guy can't do it here.
I think he was teaming a tournament at the Euros.
He was really good for Spain when they won. And he's just continued it, yeah. So he was brilliant last night against Lamine Yamal, who was very quiet. Got taken off towards the end.
He's injured at the minute. He's come back from injury, Lamine Yamal.
Again, like, to the point about lack of jeopardy in here, Lamine Yamal playing class against Chelsea at this point of the tournament is like, or it's optional.
Well, he's also played a lot of games. You just would be concerned.
Yes, he's a young fella.
They get flogged now. He's physically capable of doing it. And then actually, 3 years later, you're like, he probably wasn't.
Mm.
All those kickings. An interesting story in the business pages of the Irish Times. Legend of Troy sparks soccer spending spree. Is it possible the Irish football team could save the Irish economy from whatever's happening here? Thanks to Troy Parrott's goal-scoring heroics in Budapest 10 days ago, spending on flights to the Czech Republic took off in the minutes after Ireland's World Cup playoff draw was made. AIB, just on the AIB, say 250 grand was spent on flights by its customers between 1 and 2 o'clock last Thursday, just after the draw. Spending wasn't confined to airlines. Over 800 grand changed hands in Irish sports shops on the Saturday before the match against Hungary, climbing to more than a million on the day after the famous victory. Shirt sales through the roof. Season tickets sold out. The boom is back, baby. Mm. All on the back of Troy Parrott.
What games are the season tickets going to get you?
You'll get those two games guaranteed, whatever that second game is going to be, whether it's the final or a friendly.
Away.
And then,
but like, will there be enough?
Then you see, there's three friendlies, and I think there are three Nations League games.
But that's what I mean. Are two playoffs? If we get two playoffs, are they not both going to be away?
No,
the second one's at home.
No, we got home. Sure, we got home draw.
Second one, I missed that.
Yeah. Which was amazing because that part of the draw last week, it was just so random. They were just like, we're just going to see who's going to be home and away. There was like no seedings whatsoever to that part of it.
In advance, we'd been told the opposite, or certainly it had been floating in the ether. No, there was no prospect of us getting.
No, it was.
Once we were in the pot.
It was dropped. That you could. It was
on the day.
There was going to be a randomness to it.
In the all week, it was like, oh.
I think it was. Yeah. Anyway, it was close to it for sure. Right. But it was mad because everything else was so unbelievably seeded with an inch of its life, which is totally fair. And then it came to like the last part of the draw was like, oh, now we're going to determine who's home and away in the final.
So if we lose to Czechia.
We get a home.
Well, you don't get anything.
No. Well, we get a friendly at home on the same day of the final. against North Macedonia.
So it's like, but there's no other. those tickets are basically probably being bought just for that, the prospect of that home game.
Well, it's a good question for John Martin.
Because there's nothing else coming up, is there? Like you'll have
the Nations League autumn. We'll get into it when it comes to it.
Imagine if we blew, like, isn't there a war? If
you're coming off the back of a World Cup, then it's like amazing. If you're not, then it's like Jesus Christ.
The one for John Martin is, so say if you've bought those season tickets, right, and Ireland do qualify for the World Cup, do you get a discount or at least to travel to the World Cup? On an FAI chartered flight?
Yeah.
We've been told here, sorry, the lighting on myself and Arthur is very harsh.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that's harsh. I think it's quite flattering.
That's pretty bright on me, to be honest.
That is, the spotlight's on you firmly, buddy. You're kind of fading into the background as if you're about to disappear. By contrast, that's the one thing about that temporary home, you know.
It was kinder.
Everyone was consistently lit.
Very quickly, Meath GAA make €126,000 provision for revenue payment in 2025 accounts. So all of the GAA county boards are going to start paying revenue. Scrum collapse was one off, says Johnny Sexton. Did you see this? Sexton was out.
Well, we weren't talking about the scrum, right, up until South Africa.
The new Leia Arena is the name for the RDS. Looks good. Have you seen the pictures of it?
I drove by it with the, when we were doing that Renault video. We drove by it.
Yeah. But they were actually in it yesterday. They were.
Yeah, no, I saw the picture. I saw they have a new Instagram account now, the Leia Arena.
In my eyes, it's a one-off. That's never happened to our scrum before. I know we've got good people involved in that department. A lot of work has been done there. So they'll come up with the solutions. They'll come up with fixes. There were a couple of brilliant scrums that we didn't get rewarded for at key parts of the game, which was disappointing. But sometimes it's very hard to change when the scrum has gone a certain way for an early part of the match. If you fix it for a couple, it's almost unbelievable and we don't get the rub of the green. I'm sure the lads will fix it. And as I said, it's never happened before, so I wouldn't expect it to happen again soon.
It's amazing rationale. It's just amazing. It's like, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong here, but I don't think anyone's probably adopted South Africa's attempt before in the scrum.
Landed on something there. We haven't played South Africa. It just since seems last time we played South Africa.
It seems utterly mad way to be going. Like, well, that'll never happen again.
I mean, I'm sure France are looking at it going, France might be able to do something similar to us.
It just
we won't play them again until next November.
Yeah.
So how do we practice?
I trust he knows what he's talking about. Like he obviously knows his rugby. But it does, some of the stuff afterwards has been mad. Even the Farrell stuff on Saturday about that front row has been world class at times over the last 5-6 years. And I was like, what does that? I don't think anyone's denying that. Like it's a weird. Jesus, lads, keep everything positive. Everything positive. Keep spinning positivity.
They have to, Arthur, to avoid clowns like us. You know, they're not avoiding clowns. You know, they're talking about us like this all the time. It's like if we believe all the doubts,
but we're not buying it. Have they not watched any sport over the last 12 months where literally everybody was fueled by they wrote us off? Everybody from Rory McIlroy to Troy Parrott. Everybody has Kerry.
They might now, you know, but the Irish rugby team isn't written off, you know.
Well, no,
it's just talked about.
They're
a lot.
They're getting 3 out of 10 for 19 minutes of rugby.
One player is.
Yeah.
The rest are getting sixes and sevens. You know?
Yeah, it's too much.
It's
too much like a hammer.
I'm so unsurprised that they're taking this tone publicly. Do you think that they're like that privately?
I think that there might be an element of them not holding themselves to account in a meaningful way. I've been saying that since the start of this bit, where I'm like, actually, my concerns. I think that there's a really talented team there, and I think they might get this right. They need incredible luck with injuries, and as soon as we start getting some injuries, we're screwed.
They did one better than your pre-November prediction.
Yeah. Because it turned out Australia were way worse than I thought they were.
You thought Australia were going to beat them.
Yeah, I did, because I thought Australia were actually going to be the team that showed up in the summer and in the last Lions test, but it turned out that was all a false dawn. And also Australia picked a mad team against us. James O'Connor playing 10.
I don't know, lad. Tantalising, isn't it? Like, got a result against South Africa, then it was a good November. You know, it's so reactive, this Irish.
But they did. No. That's not. It's not like it was a difference of a score at the end of the game. They were battered from pillar to post.
The minute they got a try, nearly. If they got that try, they were within a score.
You sound like Andy Farrell there.
But they were battered from... You know, looking at that match, that wasn't a meeting of equals.
No, they were down to like 11 men.
But that's their fault.
This is the other point. It's like, how heroic were we when we only had 12 men? It's like, well, how did you get 12 men? How did you get to 12 men?
Like, if you take it, like, I don't think that's reactive.
You couldn't scrum.
Yeah.
And you were absolutely stupid. Like, a seam of stupidity ran through the team at various stages.
Lack of discipline, for sure. But
brave
display in the second half.
Who caused the lack of discipline?
In previous, times, Ireland would have got hammered.
When?
Hammered out the gate.
When would that have happened?
More professional. 20 years ago. 30 years ago.
Okay, that's what we're talking about. Like,
new era.
Sorry, the first test against New Zealand in the three test series we won, we did get hammered out the gate.
And got so hammered out of the gate in 2019 in the quarter final.
Things can turn around. Yeah, we did. And like so.
And then in 2023, we were within a try away from it, you know? It's, you know, let's all relax here about Irish rugby in terms of what they've done the last few years. It's impressive enough, you know. I think they just hit a ceiling here now, that's all. But there is, you know, I understand Andy Farrell coming out and saying, would you all relax?
That's not quite what he's saying, though, is it?
No.
He's saying everything's better than you think it is. So he's acknowledging that there's a negativity that's been built up around it, but he's not dealing with that head on.
I think we're all very naive if we think that Andy Farrell isn't reading the riot act behind the scenes.
Well, could I ask something on that, right? If we go back to last November, and there was definitely that sense there after the New Zealand loss, which was obviously pretty punishing here in Dublin. Mm-hmm. That the way that finishes, that whole thing finishes on a bit of a downturn, and then he goes, and now it's back 12 months later. And again, you'd have to go, it's been at the same level, if not kind of poorer, the nature of it, because you kind of go, you're hopefully building each year, and you'd hope that Prendergast, Crowley, everything else would be a bit further on. So the only thing on that is, where you're saying that you'd be reading the riot act, where's the proof of it over the course of when this team peaked and where they are now and the 2027? Are they they're getting worse in results wise? Mm-hmm. They're on a down. It's going downward trend objectively, just on results.
And you'd say performance
and performance for sure. So when you're saying they're probably doing more in the background than we can see in the foreground. Mm-hmm. Where's the evidence of it?
Well, the evidence is not there because the results are bad, but it doesn't mean that he's happy behind the scenes. That's my point here.
Oh, I'd say he's definitely not happy. But how is it being communicated? Right.
So, if he joins the chorus of the way we're talking about the team this week, if he was to do that, let's say, and he did it publicly, being like, yeah, this team is past it now. But it's gone past its peak.
It doesn't have to be that harsh.
That's the age profile thing now. We're not as good as we were 2 years ago, and all the players are coming from one team. So, if he said that and agreed with us, we'd be like, that's great. That's a great analysing the situation. And then he has to deal with the players that we don't have to deal with. So if he starts buying into what everyone's saying, they're going to be the least confident group of players.
That's your specific read. And it's some other analyst's read of exactly what the issues are. But it's not wrong for him to come out and say the scrum got annihilated and we have incredible amounts of work to do in that. We need to find out why that happens. That's the bit.
But like, why does he have to say it publicly?
Well, what has he said publicly prior to that team?
Okay.
The way they fronted up there when we were down to 12 men, we won the second half.
Some of the great managers in sport will say nothing but positive things about their team.
I get that.
When things are going bad.
I get that. There's no evidence that
it's working
at the moment.
But the same great managers who would say great things about their team would say that during terrible runs of form.
And they'd all won something like the World Cup quarterfinal.
And he has a Grand Slam and a championship, the same as every other manager ever in terms of the World Cup. I'm not surprised at all that he's dealing with it. Are you happy with it though? Happy with it?
Yeah.
No, I mean, I'm unhappy with a lot of things to do with that rugby team at the moment. But I'm not surprised with it, no. I mean, it would be great if he came out and said, yeah, it's no good. And I know we have to go now. So this is going to be a bigger conversation. I think we should really go back to this, actually, because I think there's loads in it.